We're good.
Okay, let's try that one more time. Welcome to Ask an Atheist. We are a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We come to you live every Sunday afternoon at Scan Studios in Seattle, and we archive online at www.askanatheist.tv. I'm Mike Gillis, and joining me, this is Father Sam Mulvey.
How you doing? I haven't actually changed my mind a little bit, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But
he just got the collar for the women.
And the occasional free stuff.
The free stuff. It's like free room and board.
It's actually pretty interesting. I've worn it publicly a couple times, and there is a little bit of deference that I don't normally get when I wear this outfit. Mm-hmm. So, but it is a heck of a costume, and I look pretty snazzy in it. If I had an excuse to wear it more often, I think I would. But
I think that is an excuse to wear it more often. I think right there. People let you cut in line.
Well, I haven't done anything like that. I've been a little careful not to destroy the mojo. I don't know why.
I really think what we need to do is to take you to an adult bookstore, and you just go in, not say anything, buy the most horrific thing you can find.
Oh.
Just like the weird sort of dwarf, yeah. You know, golden shower fetish, you know, amputee thing. Just come up, silently buy it, and just walk out.
Okay.
And you've given that person the best story of their life.
That's true. That is true. That would be a story. So we're having a bit of fun today. Our scheduled show, which was going to be about those ghost hunting episodes.
Yes, those fun TV programs where people pretend to be the gang from Scooby-Doo. And they run around, they hear the house creak, and they hear some stuff on some sort of a meter. And then they act scared in night vision and run away.
Yeah, our host for this episode was going to be Case. Case is a little bit under the weather, and we, you know, shout out to him, get well soon, and we're looking forward to actually doing that episode. And we thought about maybe going on without Case, but he's really got some good material for it. So
yeah, Case is really the skepticism king.
He is.
That he actually is the president of Seattle Skeptics, so this is his bread and butter. And any episode that we were going to give you on skepticism that does not involve Case, we are kind of shortchanging you, and we could not do that. So we want to give Case the floor on that. You will see that episode.
No, we do have a couple announcements.
We do have a couple announcements. One of them, as you might know, we were inspired by the Atheist Experience, which is an Austin-based cable access program like ours. And for a while, roughly about 12 years or so, the Atheist Experience was the only atheist TV show anywhere, let alone on public access. This June, we became the second, and now it appears there is a third, Free Thought Forum. If you go to their website, they're at rationalists.org. Free Thought Forum is based out of Knoxville, Tennessee, and it's actually the conjunction of two different organizations in that area.
Do we know which ones?
I forgot to write the name down, but okay. If you go to rationalists.org, you will see a link to the site. I check out their episodes. It's really good to know that, you know, we're not the only ones out there doing this. I think it's important. I think in a lot of ways, the TV show thing can spread in no different a way than the billboard campaign or the bus ad campaign. Make it a visibility thing that people don't hear our arguments. And if you watch a lot of TV shows where they have an atheist character, a lot of times it's because, oh, my grandmother had cancer or I had this horrible traumatic experience. That hasn't been the case for Sam and me. And the reason that you see those sort of arguments in fiction is because those people never hear our side of things. And that's why this show is important. And that's why it's important to have it in as many locations as possible.
There's also, the thing people have been talking to us about is, well, you know, you're starting your own atheism show, blah, blah, blah. Do you guys see yourself in competition with Atheist Experience or with other shows or anything like that? No, we don't. As far as we're concerned, the more the merrier. I mean, we're focusing on atheism in the Washington area. They're focusing on atheism in Austin. They're probably focusing on atheism in Knoxville. And it all works together. We all want to work together. We talk to the Atheist Experience folks a lot. One of the other creators of the show, Jeremy, actually lives in Austin and is hoping to be a liaison between us and them. I mean, we're all in this basically for the same thing, to get the voice out there, to let people know that atheists are around, and and that we're
that we exist.
That we're
and I think a lot
exist,
of it too is that so much of the misconceptions about us is because people never hear our side of things.
Yeah.
And even when somebody has a well-meaning portrayal in a TV show, like recently the show Glee had an episode about religion. And there were two atheist characters. Both of those characters, their atheism is based on some sort of past traumatic event.
Right.
And that really isn't the case for atheists that we know. For me, it's just a look at the evidence and just finding that the evidence for the existence of any God is just really, really wanting.
I'm seeing a lot more evidence that traumatic experience is why some people become more fundamentalist or more religious. But I've not met a lot of atheists out there who become atheists because of some traumatic experience.
Like, your grandmother dies and you can't understand, how horrible this is. So therefore you get... It's weird because a lot of it comes to that sort of TV trope you find, which is that angry at God.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I've never been angry at... I've been angry at fictional characters, but within that bubble of like, oh, I can't believe that Darth Vader did that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I should make it explicit before we move on. I am wearing this outfit and we have this background and our colors are a little different because today is Halloween and we're having a little bit of fun. This was my costume this year. And I thought it pretty appropriate given what I'd spend most of my time doing, which is this show. So I'm not actually a priest. And right now I'm not really even playing one on TV. So just have that out there. This is a costume. I don't wear this. Well, I'm thinking about wearing it every day because I look good.
I think you can pull it off. It looks a lot more natural than a lot of people who wear a priest costume on television.
Yeah.
It works for you.
So. I think it works.
It works.
I like the accessories.
I believe that actually came with the jacket.
It did. It did. It absolutely did.
Yeah.
You may have noticed during our introduction that...
Oh, wow. That was real.
You may have noticed during our introduction that that we had a bit of fan art. I skipped on his name. David Gonzalez, was it?
David...
Oh, the Gecko Ninja. The Gecko Ninja.
I think that's his real name.
I think that is his real name. On his certificate of live birth or whatever it is.
He got manufactured from him,
but
from some Kenyan robot.
It's the first piece of fan art the show has ever received, and it's obviously the first piece of fan art I've ever received.
Yeah.
Let's
put that up again.
Can we put that up again?
There you go.
Yeah, there it is.
I do sort of enjoy that I have the Matt Smith Doctor Who hair.
Yeah, I do like that. You could pull that off. They got the smirk perfectly. I do like that. I'm sort of missing my goatee, and now that I see it without it, I might consider that look. And I'm also a little on the blonde side, though that's kind of hard to tell when my hair's pulled back.
But I've never had anyone draw fan art of me before.
Fan art, it boggled the mind. I spent like 3 or 4 days just going, there is fan art of me on the internet. There is fan art of me on the internet.
I think the thing that still kind of blows my mind is that there are people who watch this show who don't know me personally.
Yeah.
Because it's like when somebody has a band and your friends go to that, you can never really trust that they actually like your band.
Yeah.
Because you're like, they're supporting you because they're your friend.
And most of my friends, especially those who aren't in the atheism movement, they get worried because we have a show every week, and it's sometimes difficult for them to keep on top of it. And they're like, oh, I didn't watch your show this week, I'm sorry. It's like, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Watch it when you can. This is entertainment. And so it's weird to encounter people I don't know who want to talk to me about the show. Like, for example, I've been gone the last 2 or 3 weeks. I was in Phoenix, Arizona. And while I was out there, I figured one of the reasons I left Arizona is because I wanted to be part of an atheist community, and one of the many reasons I left Arizona. But I like it. I just I needed to move on, and so I Googled see if there's a group of atheists in Phoenix, and it turns out there is. They were all in Ahwatukee, which is probably why I didn't spot them, and I went to this meetup group, and I was recognized. I mean, not initially, because I guess the guy figured, what the heck would a guy in Washington be doing in Phoenix? And then I started talking about the TV show a little bit. And he's like, oh, you are from Ask an Atheist. I'm like, yeah, I am. And you know about this. And
yeah.
I suppose I shouldn't be too surprised, but it was kind of a shock.
On some level, I'm still, like I said, I'm still surprised that people who don't know us watch the show and watch it regularly.
Yeah.
That's flattering. I mean, even one of our first letters that was actually complaining about something we had done, they started out their email by saying that they DVR us.
Yeah.
And I remember us just being, somebody DVRs our show.
DVRing us is hard.
It's because we're not even listed in the thing. You can't look us up by the name. You have to know the time spot and put it in manually.
Yeah.
On the DVR. It's to me, it was like, whatever the complaint was, I'm already flattered that somebody is using up space on a hard drive
for us.
Yeah.
They're using their resources to watch us be weird on TV. So I had a little bit of a shout-out. Hello, Phoenix Atheists. It was really great hanging out with you. We have something that we've started up a few weeks ago that we've not gotten a lot of attention to, but we've got a couple, and we're gonna do one today. We have a voicemail, and get them ready. The voicemail line we started a few weeks ago, it's for when the show is not live and you'd like to talk to us and you don't feel like sending us an email. You can call us at 206-420-0997, and you'll get my voice saying, "Welcome to Ask an Atheist," and then you can leave us a message.
Yeah, then you're not really inhibited by what our time slot is to call in that way. You can still have your voice on the show.
Right.
Because we do have viewers that are, one, not in Washington, but also not in even the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm still floored by that.
We have one voicemail, which we'd like to play now. Maybe. Oh, well, that's close.
It's still us.
Yes, my name is Curtis Clayton. I'm a black atheist in North Carolina, new to the whole atheist thing. And I've listened to some of your shows on YouTube, and I saw that you were mentioning the atheist experience and how other atheists should, help promote other atheists. And I had just found an atheist rapper named Greatest.
I heard it cut out.
I heard it cut out, too.
All right. A little bit of technical difficulty there.
Square, G-R-A-Y-D-O-N,
Square.
You can sit up.
And, yeah, we can talk about this.
I was wondering if any of you have ever heard of him. I've listened to his music.
Okay. We can synopsize a little bit. Why don't you?
He was talking about Graydon Square, who is an atheist rapper. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of songs specifically about atheism. He references things like double blind studies and a number of things. I believe he's actually studying physics.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was MIT.
Hear about this until today. And we're sitting here getting ready for the show. And I look up, because I wanted to hear a bit of it before I spoke anything about him. And, one of the albums that he's got, the track that I listened to, was an album called The Kardashev Scale. And I thought that was great. And all the references are wonderful. I am going out and getting these albums. So not much I can say about it, because I'm just learning about it myself. But I thought I thought it was important that we get out there and...
And, let's promote other atheists. I think it's one of the things that other people had done for us very early on in our program, people like Freethinker, Bionic Dance, others. Also the people at the ACA who are promoting us, getting the message out for us, saying, hey, we like what these guys are doing. Let's do the same thing for Graydon Square, even though I think actually he is better known than we are at this point, especially among the atheist community. So, yeah, definitely go out and check his things. And you could probably explain the Kardashev Scale.
Oh, the Kardashev Scale. Oh man, who's gonna put on the spot here? Is that the type of civilizations type one?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, we're type zero civilization is what we have now. Type one civilization is a civilization that uses all of the energy of its planet. Type two civilization is a civilization that uses all the energy of its star. And type three civilization is one that likes to make s'mores and have lunch. No, that's Douglas Adams. Sorry. Just stuff like that, just questions about galactic civilizations, and it ties into the Drake Equation and stuff like that. Well, people like to tie it into the Drake Equation, and it was pretty awesome. The Kardashev Scale, pretty good pun for a rap album.
Yeah, and don't feel bad. That all went over my head too. So
sorry, I'm a sci-fi guy.
Oh, I'm a sci-fi guy too, but that still went over my head.
All right. We do have some news.
Let's do some news stories real quick. This is one that comes from the Associated Baptist Press, and according to it sounds a little odd that we'd be getting a story from the Associated Baptist Press.
It's the AP.
Yeah.
But Baptist. Okay.
It's like Mrs. Pac-Man. You just add a word on there.
Mrs. Pac-Man was superior.
Yeah, basically. Well, yeah, it was.
Okay.
But this is the Associated Baptist Press, at least according to Americans United for Separation Church and State. I guess they just had their 20th anniversary. They are actually a really good source for learning about different Baptist denominations. So... Here's what it says. The sheriff's office settles lawsuit with former church member outed for blog. This is in Jacksonville, Florida. It says, the sheriff's office in Jacksonville, Florida has agreed to study its conflict of interest code for detectives and develop a training program on First Amendment considerations as part of a settlement with an anonymous blogger who was unmasked by the office's power of subpoena for criticizing his former pastor. The city and state must pay $50,000 to Tom Rich, a former member of Jacksonville's First Baptist Church. Rich operated a FBC Jack's Watchdog, a blog often critical of the church's pastor, Mac Brunton. First Baptist has long been the largest Christian denominational church in the county, and or in the country, and one of the most prominent congregations in the Southern Baptist Convention. Rich filed a lawsuit in 2009 claiming a violation of his First Amendment rights guaranteeing free speech and prohibiting the establishment of religion when Detective Robert Hinson, a member of First Baptist, who served on the pastor's security detail, got a subpoena ordering Rich's internet service provider to reveal his identity. So what we're basically talking about is that there's a member of the church who is a member of the police department as well.
Right.
And there's this blogger who's anonymously criticizing the pastor, and he abused his authority and basically did state work on behalf of the church. That clearly, it's sort of like, I'm investigating something, not because I feel that there's a crime and I have some sort of probable cause that I can provide with the police department.
In order to remove someone's anonymity when they were reporting about wrongs at the church.
He's basically using police resources, state resources, to investigate somebody that the church wants to look into for criticizing the pastor. He's a member of this congregation.
There's three or four shades of First Amendment issues here. There's the doing the work of a church on the state's dime. There's freedom of speech.
Yeah,
there is reasonable expectation of privacy, which is why a lot of these.
Yeah, and it isn't like he's committing a crime. They wanted to investigate him because they wanted to toss him out of the church.
Yeah,
not because they thought he was committing some sort of a crime or abusing, you know, anybody. I mean, it's weird. He was basically criticizing a pastor, and they wanted to out him so they could.
Well, they
did.
And all I don't want to say all's well that ends well, because this didn't end well. Work done for the church on the state's dime, but
there's consequences here. It says that Rich claimed he chose to blog anonymously to draw attention to issues in the church rather than himself, and thought it would encourage more open discussion. In allowing the case to move forward, U.S. District Judge Marsha Morales Howard noted that the Supreme Court ruled that the First Amendment protects anonymous speech. After he was exposed, Rich says that the church obtained trespass warnings against him and began proceedings to revoke his church membership. Eventually, he and his wife left their church of more than 20 years to join another congregation. While the settlement does not admit wrongdoing by the Jacksonville Sheriff's or State Attorney's offices, Sheriff John Rutherford agreed to meet with Rich and his lawyers and the city's legal counsel to discuss ethical issues arising from the case. So basically, there was a $50,000 thing in there, in the settlement. But it's amazing that this is that weird sort of sense of immunity to everyone else's rules, a special set of rights that a lot of religions seem to unknowingly sort of try to give themselves, that somebody's attacking this glorious thing, therefore I can essentially abuse my position with the state to go after somebody that I disagree with on theological basis. It's really absurd.
This is especially true in the bigger and the mega churches where it's like I've got a flock of 50 or 60,000 people. I can run around violating laws with impunity. It happens again and again and again. That's what got people like Peter Popoff. It wasn't the fact that they were quacks. It was the fact that they had a bunch of people under them doing things that weren't particularly legal. And that's really
a weird sort of sense. Like they somehow think that the criticism of the church is somehow comparable to them, or it's somehow less worse than them actually abusing this guy's privacy. You know, violating this guy's privacy, using state resources to basically try to root out church enemies.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Speaking of kind of scary,
our next story comes to us from the Sydney Morning Herald, and it's baby dies as family jump to escape devil. A baby was killed and several more people seriously injured when a family of 11 threw themselves from a third-floor flat to flee a man they mistook for the devil, French investigators said. The bizarre tragedy came to light on Saturday when firefighters were called to the village of La Vierre, on the outskirts of Paris, following reports that several people had jumped from a balcony in a welfare housing block. Among the injured, they found an entirely naked man of African origin with a knife wounded his hand, and two children a baby and a 2-year-old girl. The baby died later after receiving treatment, hospital treatment in Paris. The assistant prosecutor from Versailles, Odile Favre, told reporters the incident began in the early hours when a group of 13 people were watching television in an apartment and the naked man heard the baby cry. The man got up to prepare a bottle for the baby when his wife, seeing him, screamed, "It's the devil, it's the devil," Favre explained.
I really don't know what we can say about that.
No, that is a weird one.
That is weird on almost every level.
Yeah, in the confusion following this apparent case of mistaken identity...
Yeah, there's egg on my face.
The naked man's sister-in-law stabbed him in the hand, and he was ejected through the front door of the flat. When he attempted to get back in, panic erupted. And at that point, panic erupted is that the only way to escape the devil was to leap out a window.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you should be afraid of him. Clearly, the stabbing worked.
If the stabbing worked and he's bleeding...
As Jesse Ventura once said, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
And what was that on Conspiracy Theory?
That was in Predator.
Oh, it was in Predator? Okay, so Alex Jones not involved?
No.
Okay.
But I do believe Alex Jones bleeds.
Probably. Screams a lot.
But I wonder, though, maybe this is a question of outing him as the devil. This is sort of something like John Carpenter's A Thing. Is it stabbing him in the hand some sort of method of determining if he's the devil?
Oh, right. If the blood goes into the water and it floats, he's a witch or a devil.
Yeah, if he weighs the same as a duck, I think.
Oh, if he weighs... Okay, the blood weighs the same as a duck.
Hey.
We have a call.
Randy from California. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Very well.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm actually one of those guys who hides out during holidays. I don't have a family, so I don't really want to participate much.
Yeah.
So what have you got for us today?
Oh, well, a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank you guys for being on the air.
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Man, I really thought I was the only voice out there that was supporting atheism. And I live right in the middle of a Bible Belt area, you know.
Well, so, like Eastern California?
No, Central Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And you know, it's a bunch of farmers here, and it's, like I say, it's a Bible Belt area. But it's stunning how these people can be so dependent on their faith, and yet anything that has to do, if I mention anything at all about religion of any kind, they just have a fit about it.
Yeah.
I have a computer repair shop, and I have a whiteboard up that I put, you know, different things up there. Usually it's something computer related that people have been asking me a lot. And one day I put up there, science requires you to question everything. Mm-hmm. Religion depends on belief without question. And you wouldn't believe the flack I got for that.
Oh, I can imagine. I know that even, it sounds a lot like something that one of our hosts, Scott, has said on occasion, that science has answers that or questions that may never be answered, and religion has answers that may never be questioned.
Right.
And yeah. It really is. I think that a lot of religions do build up this sort of brain force field in its adherents, that if they hear anything that contradicts their beliefs... could you turn down the volume on your TV or stream? It's creating a little bit of an echo.
Oh, it can't, because I wouldn't able to connect.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
So, just more fun audio.
That was one of the things that I ran into when I lived in Phoenix, I talk about this in my first episode, is that for years in Phoenix, I was the only atheist that I really knew. And people would talk to me about their faith and how important it was to them, and sort of things that would happen in the community, like that they'd reach certain milestones, like confirmation or baptism or something like that. And I would you know, congratulate them because this is obviously important to them. But I would talk about atheism, and I'd get slapped down because I was against the faith or something like that, even though I was just really trying to participate in the community.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but like I said, it's that force field that you hear anything that contradicts your own belief. People have a tendency, they're in a lot of ways programmed to be very defensive.
Yeah.
That's why you have a lot of people who are critics of, say, Richard Dawkins, who have never actually read The God Delusion or watched any of his lectures.
We got the one phone call where somebody was talking about how bad Richard Dawkins was,
yeah.
and his only access to Richard Dawkins was via an episode of South Park.
Yeah,
he'd actually never heard the man speak.
He'd never heard him speak. He'd never heard anything he said. If you get the sort of meta-analysis where, and I think a lot of people do this, they don't necessarily look up anything for themselves. They simply take someone else's word for it.
Yeah.
Like, they hear something their pastor says, oh, well, Dawkins says that the world would be a paradise if everyone was just an atheist. It's like, well, he's never actually said that.
Like when we called Pat Robertson an asshat.
Yes.
There was a bit of, on one of the discussion lists I'm on, there was a bit of a sort of a tiff about that because we said Pat Robertson was an asshat, and he's not an asshat. It was quoted like this. He's a terrible human being who does this list of terrible things.
And he enjoys the suffering of others.
Therefore,
I'd say that, enjoying the suffering of others is a pretty much a good prerequisite for being an asshat.
Yeah.
I'll stick to that. It's a little weird that you're like, oh, no, he's awful in this myriad of ways, but, oh, you don't want to call him a name. That's why you call people names. If you can't call this guy a name...
So, is there anything more you have for us, Randy?
No, that was about it. I just find it. I guess I'm a little appalled by it because when I talk, especially when people approach me, to talk about it, I tell them basically there's only one prerequisite, and that is that my opinions have to count too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
And then as soon as I bring up my opinions, then not only do they discount them, but they're offended. And I don't say anything that is offensive, I don't think. I mean, I don't call anybody names. I don't say that that they're crazy for believing what they do, although I usually think that.
Yeah, but again, sometimes simply saying you disagree with them for them, I think it comes from the fact that for a long time, atheists have been really, really silent about our beliefs. We've sort of stared at our shoes and kind of just sat there when people say things. A lot of it is we've started responding to a lot of people who say this sort of stuff, and we do want to thank you for your call.
Thank you for your call.
But, a lot of it is we've been so quiet for so long that people aren't used to hearing us.
Yeah.
So it sounds louder and more strident and angry than it really is, because if you even listen to a speech by Dawkins, that guy is so remarkably mellow.
Yeah. He does get his game on once in a while, but it's always very polite, and he's always within the context.
Yeah.
But, and another thing is that since we've been quiet for so long, the threshold of attack is lower to the point where many people, the fact that I'm willing to say that I'm an atheist publicly is construed as an attack, even though I've said nothing about how I actually feel about their faith or whether or not I respect them or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
And if they would actually sit and listen, they'd probably find out that I, for the most part, do respect them.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of their faith, is I respect them because they're human beings and they're moral people. But because I'm willing to say that I'm an atheist, and because there's been silence on the atheism front for so long, it's automatically an attack.
And that's also why I like the fact that there are multiple shows doing this, because more and more people actually have to see us for who we are and what we believe and what we have to say, rather than what people have to say about what we believe and what we say. Again, the meta-analysis helps nobody, and you have to realize that you're hearing it through a filter. And like you said, this instinct to interpret it as an attack. Like, for instance, whenever I've tabled with Seattle atheists, there are people who storm right up to the booth and just start yelling at me as if simply having this banner above me is my, the first salvo in some sort of fight, that simply just stating my existence and saying that I'm just as capable of morality as anybody else is just intolerable to some people, that they're so used to having this monopoly on speech about things like values and beliefs.
There's also the sort of conflating factor of their own values for when they show up publicly as a religious person, is that when we have a booth, when we have this TV show, we have said time and time again, one of the things that we say time and time again is that we are not evangelizing for atheism so much. We're not trying to convert you to become an atheist if you're not an atheist and watching the show. For us, this is about visibility. For us, this is about just getting our voice out there. And that's true for the booths at the street fairs and stuff like that for Seattle atheists as well.
Yeah, like
but
Randy says, our opinion has to count too.
Our opinion has to count. But the thing is when a church or a religious organization does the boothing that we do, they're usually doing it for the purpose of proselytization. Is that they're there to try and convert people.
They are trying to
try to convince people that they have the truth. And so they see that, and they automatically make the connection, well, when we do this, we're trying to get converts. So when they are doing this, they must be trying to get converts, too.
Yeah.
So we should go attack them.
Yeah, it kind of comes back to something I've said before, too, which is that I don't think a lot of religious people are able to think outside of this template that's been created. This idea that, okay, I as a Christian have a God, I've got a holy book, I've got a Messiah, I've got this creed. So simply what they do with a lot of other people, especially with atheists, is they just take that template and just replace, okay, well, your God is science,
yeah.
Your prophet is Charles Darwin. And it's like, no, that template just doesn't apply. I don't use that template.
It's something I tell theists a lot, is that they try to say that I'm trying to take God off sort of the ladder of power. Like, there's a hierarchy, and if you visualize it as a ladder, to them, God is at the top rung. So when we take God, we say there is no God, and we take it off. They seem to think that everybody is sort of promoted up the ladder, and now I'm saying that there's either something else that is in that space, like science or philosophy or psychology, or that man is somehow now God.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is not that that slot on the ladder is empty. I'm saying the ladder ain't that high. It doesn't go up that high. There's no job there to fill.
I think also I've noticed this with religious people as well, is that there's this weird use of language, that they'll use a word that has multiple definitions, and they'll try to, like, things like, say, faith.
Yeah.
Where faith, on one hand, you're saying that I basically, let's be blunt, faith is pretending to know something you don't really know. Like, I have faith that this thing exists. And it's like, I don't have evidence, so it's not about me knowing it. It's about, I'm going to pretend to know. That I'm just going to go basic on that instead of actually having evidence. Like, I don't need faith to believe that Sam is here, because I can. I mean, it's just I don't. There's nothing that I need to jump across. There's no doubt that I need to force my way through to have that belief. On the other hand, it's weird because they also try to use the same word faith with trust. Like, oh, well, you know, do you have faith in your friends? It's like, no, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I can demonstrate that my friends exist, and I can give you a pattern of behavior that basically is a chain of evidence for my trust in them.
Faith is a word with more than one definition, and that's a common thing, is that they try to say, like, faith in my friends, the same that I have a history with my friends, and I know what they're going to do, and I can fall back on them when I need to, is that they try to conflate that with the same kind of faith that there's faith in God, where there's no proof, but I'm going to believe it anyway. And that really, linguistically, these are two different concepts.
They're completely, to a certain extent, you could almost say they should be two different words.
They should be.
That one of them, it's like when I have faith in my friends, it's not that my friends exist.
Yeah.
I know that my friends exist. I never really have to worry about that. And,
or maybe apparently.
Maybe Sam doesn't exist. Okay.
Ow.
Well, now he's just a hand.
Ow.
Okay.
Ow. This is weird.
Just like Harry Potter.
Abracadabra, I'm back.
Okay.
So let's go to emails.
Let's go to emails. Actually, in a lot of ways, this goes right into our first email, the stuff that we're talking about. This comes from Evil Eye.
Is that his real name?
I'm going to assume it's his real name.
Because
everyone uses their real name on the internet.
Is that absolutely. I certainly do.
Evil Eye has to say, oftentimes a theist will argue that proof of God, that love is proof of God, because there is no scientific test that could prove love, and we all know that it exists. How do you explain emergent properties of these truths to people, like the wetness of water or the transparency of glass, including emotions? And what argument might they retort with if they understand emergence and try to use it to explain God? I would straight out say, first of all, love is not an energy field.
No.
It's not. It's an emotion.
As much as I love the Hyperion Cantos,
yes,
love is not a fundamental force of the universe so far as the scientific evidence suggests.
It's like when there's a Final Fantasy bad guy,
yeah,
who represents the force of chaos. Chaos is not a real thing like that. And the other thing is things like love. Love is also demonstrable.
Yeah, you can test for love. Mm-hmm. You know, to get an fMRI, do an oxytocin level check, which means you're either in love or you're a heroin user or something like that, or maybe you're in love with heroin.
But you can actually watch the brain go through these, you know, fire off these chemicals.
Yeah.
And the same thing with wingers, like wetness. Wetness is demonstrable. Shove your hand into a bathtub.
Yeah,
that is wet.
That's wet. Is that there's physical proof? Is that we can do things that if we threw them up in the air and they landed on you, you would notice.
Yeah.
Is that and the thing is the idea, having to prove that water is wet is sort of a tautologous process anyway, because wetness is sort of the property of liquid that makes liquid a liquid,
yes.
One of the many properties.
But even if love was this energy field, let's say we discovered something like the Force from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Now, that is love, and that in, you can see that you add to it or take from it depending on everyone's emotional states. Like it's some big, you know, thought bubble over everyone's head, like in some Garfield comic strip.
Or The Sims.
Yeah, it's like The Sims, a little heart in there, and it's adding to some big meter up in the sky. Even if you found this, what's the connection to God?
Right.
And really looking at the stories in the Bible, love is not the emotion I most equate with the God described in the Bible.
No.
It's demand for obedience. At least if you're going to talk about the God of the Bible. Somebody might describe, you know, love as just a synonym for God.
Yeah.
But I don't think when most people are talking about God, they're not just using a synonym for another word or an emotion.
I mean, I understand in a family scenario that obedience is sometimes required for things to work when you have children, but there are levels, and I think if we were to judge how God acts in the Old Testament to modern child development levels.
Abraham and Isaac, Jephthah.
Yeah.
I mean.
And, well, we have another call.
We have a call. Timmy from Bellevue. What have you got for us today? Timmy?
Hello?
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 I asked, if you do not believe in God, then do you believe in the devil?
No.
No.
Just like with God, I don't think there's any independently verifiable evidence that a devil exists.
It's the same lack of evidence there is for God is the same lack of evidence there is for the devil.
Or the unicorns, or the Loch Ness Monster, or Bigfoot.
Thank you very much. Happy Halloween.
Hey, happy Halloween to you, too. All right.
Wow.
It's nice when somebody's to the point.
It's a friendly drive by Satan.
Yeah. I like when Satan comes out of that.
Yeah, yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, it was probably our youngest caller we've ever had.
I wasn't going to guess, but I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
But that's basic. This is actually a question we get a lot, is, and there was a clip in that one of that Go show that we watched that we're going to show, is if you believe in God, well, then you have to believe in the devil.
No.
And no, that's not really how it works.
There actually was a debate recently, and it was between, I believe, Dinesh D'Souza on one side and... Deepak Chopra on the other. It's just like, don't you love watching a fight where you're just like, wow, I want you both to lose. They were actually arguing over whether Satan exists. So there are people who believe in God but not Satan.
Okay.
So.
Are there people who believe in Satan but not God?
I don't know. If there is somebody out there who does believe in Satan and not God, we'd love to hear from you. Again, we are a live call-in show. Our number is 206-421-5658.
Indeed.
Please, please, magical Satan people, tell us. Tell us about your beliefs.
This is something...
But wouldn't Satan just be knocked up to God status at that point?
Ooh.
Or is he just like, you know, Marvel's Thor, where he's really powerful, but he can still lose a fight once in a while?
Well, we do occasionally do these shout-outs to the audience to see if they can get us some information. And most recently, we did one, last time I was up, we did one, about whether or not hosts count as carbohydrates or proteins, given transubstantiation. And
we're talking about the Jesus cracker.
We're talking about the Jesus, yeah, we're talking about Catholic communion. And we thought, one, we actually got a response on this request, and two, I am dressed perfectly to discuss this issue. We have an image to go with this email. And this email comes to us from Keith F. in Glasgow, Scotland. And he says, "Hi, folks. You were talking about vegan and diet-conscious Catholics in your last episode and thought you would appreciate this. The attached pic was taken at the Cathedral of St. Mary and St. Anne's in Cork in the Republic of Ireland. The sign might as well say that the church doesn't believe in its own doctrine." And there you go. Gluten-free hosts available at the cathedral. And that pretty much counts, is that if transubstantiation is a real thing, it's a doctrine of the faith for Catholicism, is that they really believe that this stuff is transmuted into the body of Christ, which means it turns from a carbohydrate, it turns from grains into human flesh. One, well, ew. Two, that means that it's Atkins positive, celiacs people don't need to worry, people with irritable bowel syndrome or dead bowel syndrome don't need to worry because this stuff becomes protein and it's easier for them to digest.
It's kind of weird in a lot of ways. The transubstantiation is such a bizarre belief.
Mm.
And I've actually seen this before. Like, I had a friend who refers to himself as a recovered Muslim.
Okay.
He was born in Iran, and he's dating a woman who is, her family is Catholic. I don't think she's a believer or anything. But he went to a Catholic mass, I believe, for Easter. And they went through that, and he was not prepared for the eating the body and drinking the blood of your God part of the thing. And when I talked to him on the phone, he's like, they were talking about eating Jesus and drinking his blood. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that. It's weird, though, because when you're sort of brought up with that, you don't really realize that as far as the broad spectrum of religions go, that's really, really weird.
It is really out there. Yeah.
It is really weird. I don't know of any other major religious denominations that actually talk about eating their deity.
I do wonder, is there an encyclical on this or something like that, that it's okay to have gluten-free hosts because it doesn't... I'd like to actually hear how that argument is put together. I mean, I know why they need gluten-free hosts.
Yeah.
Because it's a cracker, and people with celiac disease and stuff like that would have trouble digesting it. And that's why they have them. And apparently that's why they need them at the cathedral. But that means that on some level, they understand that the transubstantiation thing doesn't really go.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wonder how they put that together because, well, the Catholics are good at putting some interesting arguments like that together, and I'd like to see where they go with it. So if you know, a continued shout out, if you know how this is put, how this functions at the Catholic Church, I'd like to hear it. And thank you, Keith F., for your
I'm picture. Thinking it may be a bit of a Schrodinger's cat sort of thing, where it's both a cracker and Jesus at the same time, as long as it's in the stomach.
Okay.
So you have to cut somebody open.
Heisenberg uncertainty food.
Yes.
Okay. we could go on.
we could. Do you want to talk about some Satan?
Talk about some Satan? I think, yeah, we could do that.
Let's jump to Satan.
Let's jump to Satan. I have it here. Okay, this comes to us, again, from the Austin, from the internet. Anyway, I thought I should point out something quick. In a few episodes, you have discussed the topic of Satanism and how it is essentially Christianity. One person specifically, I cannot remember the name right now. You know who said that? Was that you, or was that Casey?
I think it was Casey who said that.
Hey, Casey. I assume you would like to be more intelligible about your answers and much more complete at times, which is why I want to point out that Satanism is not always similar or even a part of Christianity. Such as the Church of Satan, it is an atheist group. I would also call myself a Satanist, but also an atheist.
The guy that we were talking to on the phone at the time was a theistic Satanist.
He was.
But I think it's a guess we do know the Church of Satan is non-theistic. They are not rational, though.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note that not all atheists are both rational or skeptical. That these guys do inherit, they do take a lot of weird magic-based beliefs.
Yeah.
And aside from the idea that they're just saying, oh, well, I'm going to watch Star Wars and I'm going to root for Darth Vader. Take that. Aside from that sort of angle, I think that most of our criticisms still hold. I do think it's childish and I do think it's contrarian.
But, I like a little bit of childish contrarian fun now and again. I mean, I have described the Church of Satan as sort of atheist with a penchant for dinner theater.
Dressing like Ming the Merciless.
And dressing like Ming the Merciless, which, you know, I could do. And I've known I've known a few people who were involved with the Church of Satan now and again. And I thought it was fun. I couldn't take it seriously.
How could you take it seriously? You're going around dressed like Professor Snape.
You could go on about
it. It's like, come on. It's like, okay, Dr. Strange.
I would, you know, I'd go to their events or something like that, but I don't believe it. And the other thing is that the Church of Satan does have a semi-spiritual magical component to it, is that they do believe in some sort of Crowleyistic kind of magic force of will type thing. And that is unproven, and as a skeptic, I can't go with that, is there's no evidence for this working. So while they might not believe in God and they might be atheists, they do have a sense of the supernatural in the Church of Satan.
It's kind of like the Raelians in that way.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't... I've said this a million times before, but I think it's far more important why you believe something than what you believe. So, yeah, you're an atheist. So what? You can be an atheist for really stupid reasons. the same way you can be a Christian for really stupid reasons. There's one good reason, and that's evidence. If you can actually back up and show demonstrable evidence, independently verifiable evidence for your claims, there's no reason for anyone else to possibly believe
it. I do think there's perfectly valid reasons to be an atheist without being a skeptic. I think there are valid reasons out there. I mean, there's just sort of the general crisis of faith things where people just realize that the religion they've been following for years doesn't make any sense at all, and before and go to atheism and say they don't, I don't believe in this and I don't believe in religion, before they go to anything about skepticism. It's just that on Ask an Atheist, we are also very interested in skepticism. I don't know that everybody involved in the show is a skeptic. But,
I think for the most part they are.
Okay.
But again, we know lots of people who are, they're atheists, but they're also conspiracy theorists. They're atheists, but they're also, like, they believe in, you know, any number of weird other New Agey kind of beliefs.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's one thing. I mean, really, atheism is not a worldview. Atheism is a position on just one question, and everything else is sort of open.
I called myself a skeptic well before I called myself an atheist, publicly. There are a lot of skeptic agnostics out there, and some skeptic agnostics actually say that agnosticism is the only supportable methodology, is that there's no evidence, so you can't answer one way or the other.
But I think also they sometimes get confused on this scale, as if there's this three-part scale, and there's theism, atheism, and agnosticism in the middle. These things overlap. They're not mutually exclusive. Like, for instance, I'm an agnostic atheist. I take the same position on God that I take on leprechauns. I don't know with 100% certainty that no gods exist. However, I think it's so incredibly unlikely that I'm not going to take it as a serious position unless I get some evidence first. The same thing with leprechauns. I can't say that there are no leprechauns that are just evading our detection somewhere on the planet, and they're using their magical powers to hide
and
from
every
us.
Time we have this conversation, somebody we usually get an email saying, you guys are actually agnostics, and it's unfair for you to say that you're atheists. And we go over this time and time again, is that there are certain types of atheism, and they've got, the many people like Dawkins have suggested scales for atheism, and the difference between atheism and anti-theism. And there's essentially, for me, once again, is I am an agnostic atheism, is that agnostic atheist. I am not agnostic atheism, I'm just one guy. Is that I have no evidence for or against God, and I am operating under the assumption that without that evidence, God does not exist. Mm-hmm. I suppose that there are some people out there who sort of are agnostic theists who say there are no there's no evidence for or against God, so I'm going to believe in God.
Yeah.
Except they usually just pick one God and go with it, usually for cultural reasons.
Not even like a deistic one. But again, I've made this argument before. I make the argument that 99% of sane, honest people are agnostic, including theists, which means believers, when you really get down to it, they don't absolutely know. We do have one last call, and we can make it kind of quick. Cheryl from Seattle, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you. I was calling to respond to your mention of the skepticism, because I was raised agnostic in the 50s by my mother, who had witnessed World War II and said that she personally couldn't believe in a God, but it was up to me to find my own. And she personally owned a Bible and said every educated, you know, should read the Bible, but people in church were not necessarily all better than people outside of church, and for me to make up my own mind. And I felt like I had to hide it. I'm 57 years old, and when I went to grade school, you had to list what faith you were to enter the school. And my father was in the military, so I was in both in school in Germany and in school in the Northwest. And so I asked my mother how I should fill that in, because I felt really uncomfortable being agnostic or atheist.
Yeah.
Everyone appeared to have a Christian God, and it was even mentioned, like, in the classroom, such as stories. Oh, you all know this story. Well, I didn't, so I was constantly feeling left out, and I felt like I had to hide it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so my mother, I said, Mom, what do I put on this form? And she says, well, you know, stick to Protestant. That's probably the least worst of them. And so I just remembered I was a P with a long word from then on. You know. What I did, I also researched a lot of the church, and I married into a Catholic family. I tried to convert. I mean, I have really appreciated teachings of Buddhism on how life is short. There's suffering. There's way out of suffering. I found some good teachings with Buddhism, but I also learned about the long, bloody overthrow of women that the organized Catholic Church undertook for 1,000 years, and we only know the tip of the iceberg, you know, the witch hunts. And it's the fear I had as a young girl, I do not feel there is as great a fear now. I think you can say openly you're agnostic or atheist. I don't know if you agree with me. That's my question.
Well, it's not dangerous, I don't think, anymore.
It's not as dangerous as it once was.
I mean, there's places in the world where if you announce you're agnostic or atheist, you could be killed for it. We don't, thankfully, we don't live in one of those places. One thing you said earlier, I think this is very true, talking about just this fear of outing yourself, I had that sort of fear, too, in my development.
I completely did, for
and
years.
I never had the sort of crazy Christian upbringing that anyone else had. I also had that sort of very secular upbringing. But at the same time, the cultural stigma against those words was so great that it took a long time for me to accept that I really didn't believe that stuff. And when I did, I actually found it somewhat liberating.
Yeah.
When I finally said, you know what, I am an atheist.
I do live in Tacoma. I live in Pierce County, and we're near the Air Force and the Army base near there. And it is still difficult to be an atheist in the military.
Oh, very nice.
I grew up on base until I was 9 years old, and then my dad retired in Tacoma. So that was exactly the culture.
Yeah, and I'm a member of Tacoma Atheists, and we occasionally get folks in from the base. And some of the stories here, eventually I'd like to put a show together about that. They get pretty bad.
Yeah.
So
There has been a movement in the past couple decades by evangelical Christians to really start harassing people in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sad, but a lot of this has gone, it's soaked in to a really scary degree. I mean, things like the Air Force Academy being the most absurd and offensive examples of it.
There was that concert fiasco.
Yeah, where people were, they had to mandatorily go to a Christian rock concert by their commanding officer. That's the sort of stuff that really lawsuits are the sort of thing that sort of drag that stuff out. And again, this is why a separation of church and state is just so necessary. Because while we all have a right to religious freedom and expression, including the right to not believe, the government doesn't have that right. The government is an artificial entity that's supposed to represent all of us, which means it has to be neutral, not saying anything of support or condemnation of any religious belief.
Yeah. Cheryl, you have a great story. Thank you for sharing it, and thank you for your
call. Thank you kindly. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
That really amazing story, and I, that's great. Thank you for sharing that with us.
it really is.
And that is an episode that I'd like to do sometime, if we can find people willing to speak, because it is very difficult to be in the military and to be an atheist. And I think it's something that light needs to be shed on.
And that's something a lot of religions have done forever, is just trying to equate patriotism with religious belief. You know, God bless America. They try to
one nation under God.
They try to equate that. I mean, the one nation under God. The insertion of that into the pledge was the lobbying effort of religious groups.
Yeah.
In the 1950s, and the same thing with In God We Trust on currency. That was religious groups lobbying. A lot of people have this false belief that this stuff has been there since the creation of this country. That is not true.
They've
sort of devised their own history.
And one blogger that I read, Slacktivist Fred Clark, said that there are Christian dominionists out there. They want to run the country, and they want it to be a Christian country. So they want to make the government sectarian. Okay, you can't all be right.
Yeah.
Which sect?
See, that's what
who
happens.
Loses? Who wins?
That's the thing about people don't seem to realize about the religious right, is that it's not this big monolithic group with like a pope or something.
Yeah.
This is a coalition of thousands of little denominations. And and the thing is that once they do get power, they are going to start eating their own. If they win. And you start to see that in things like when Mitt Romney ran for president and all these evangelical preachers started saying a vote for Mitt Romney is a vote for Satan.
And now all the government actually has to take stances on religious doctrinal concepts, where as a sectarian or as a secular country, they don't.
That's not our place. It's not our responsibility.
Another episode that we're going to be doing is we touched on the Church of Satan and Satanism a little bit. We're also actually going to be doing a whole episode on Satanism, the Church of Satan, and specifically the 1980 Satanic Panic.
Yes, things like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And a more recent example, things like the Harry Potter books, where people were talking about that, there's also videos of preachers screaming about how Pokemon is demons.
And Harry Potter, and it moves on. Is that that movement is still there. And it's especially interesting like right now with Christine O'Donnell.
Yeah, I really like to think of this movement as the war on fun. That there's this real movement that a lot of fundamentalists have where they want to... basically, they think of anything that's fun that doesn't involve Jesus as a rival or as a competitor for attention.
Well, if you want to battle against the war on fun with us this evening, we will be at Azteca at Northgate at 4:30 p.m. We are going to be there to have fun and to, I don't know, I didn't bring my dice bag so we can't play D&D. But I will be having a drink and talking about stuff like this and probably dressed like this. And so fighting the battle for fun.
But at the same time, we were happy to debate with anyone who disagrees with us. However, we're not looking for a fight.
Yeah.
So if you're coming to spit at us or scream at us, you can probably skip coming to Azteca. But we're happy to have conversation and debate.
Yeah.
Always happy.
I like a contentious debate. I don't like a violent debate.
No.
Yeah.
If violence is the admission you have a losing argument.
Right.
What it really comes down to is like, I got nothing.
Well, once again, thank you for watching us. Thank you for listening. If you would like to email us, you can visit our website at askanatheist.tv. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 206-420-0997 and leave us a voicemail. We may edit it when we air it on television if we can. And... Yeah. Wow, this actually went a lot better than I thought it would.
Yeah.
This is kind of emergency show, break glass, remove emails. I think it worked pretty good.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. See you next Sunday at Ask an Atheist. Sunday.